Aloha, mamá. Sorry por responder hasta ahora. Estuve toda la tarde con mi unidad arreglando un helicóptero Black Hawk. Hawái es increíble. Luego te cuento más. Te quiero.
Be all you can be. Visitando goarmy.com/español.
Boost Mobile tiene una gran oferta para que aproveches tu reembolso de impuestos al máximo y te mantengas conectado. Al cambiarte a Boost, recibe un 50% de descuento en tu primer mes de datos ilimitados. O, con un plan ilimitado de $40, llévate un Samsung Galaxy A15 5G por $39.99. Obtén los mejores teléfonos en las redes 5G más grandes del país. Con Boost Mobile, cambiarse es fácil. Solo visita BoostMobile.com. Boost Mobile, sin miedo al éxito. Para clientes nuevos y solamente en línea, requiere AutoPay. 50% de descuento en el primer mes requiere un plan de $25 al mes. Aplican otras restricciones. Visita Boost Mobile.com para detalles.
Ahorra más en JCPenney, más tu oportunidad de conocer a Shaquille O'Neal. Este sábado 4 de mayo todos ganan durante la entrega de cupones de 10, 50 o hasta $100, solo en la tienda mientras duren. De 11 a.m. a 1 p.m. los miembros de JCPenney Rewards tendrán una oportunidad exclusiva de encestar para conocer a Shaq. Habla con un asociado en la tienda o visita jcp.com y conoce más sobre la jugada. JCPenney, vale la pena. Cupón válido el 4 de mayo en selección de estilos. Entrega de cupones solo en la tienda para mayores de 18 años.
Univisión Reporta es un podcast de Euforia.
En su carrera por la reelección, el presidente de Estados Unidos, Joe Biden, enfrenta diferentes obstáculos, como las preocupaciones sobre su edad y cómo ganar el voto latino, además de tener enfrente a Donald Trump, que es, de una u otra manera, un rival muy complicado. La responsabilidad de la campaña de Biden está en manos, por primera vez en la historia, de una mujer hispana, Julie Chávez Rodríguez. Fui a hablar con Julie Chávez Rodríguez hasta Wilmington, Delaware, la ciudad donde Biden creció a partir de los 10 años de edad, donde hizo su carrera política, donde crió a su familia, donde vivió también una tragedia absolutamente brutal cuando tenía nada más 30 años, perdiendo a su primera mujer y a su pequeña hija Naomi en un brutal accidente automovilístico. Ahí tiene su sede la campaña de Joe Biden. Ahí hablamos con Julie Chávez Rodríguez, quien nos platicó de sus orígenes, de los temas centrales de la campaña y del reto de ser la primera latina que se encarga de una campaña presidencial. Hoy es lunes 18 de septiembre, soy León Krause. Esto es Univisión Reporta. En abril, Julie Chávez Rodríguez fue nombrada por Joe Biden directora de su campaña para la reelección. Antes estuvo a cargo de la Oficina de Asuntos Intergubernamentales de la Casa Blanca, trabajó en el gobierno de Barack Obama y también con Kamala Harris cuando era senadora. Julie Chávez Rodríguez es nieta del líder sindical César Chávez y comenzó en el activismo político siendo apenas una niña. Esta entrevista es la primera que presentamos en Univisión Reporta en idioma inglés.
Tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up mostly in La Paz, Keene, California, which was the headquarters of the United Farm Workers. And it's near Bakersfield in Kern County. It was a community of volunteers that worked with the United Farm Workers. And it was one of the most, you know, amazing experiences to have as a child, being able to see people that were sacrificing so much and trying to just really dedicate their lives to really helping farm workers and those most in need. And then getting to go out and be on picket lines and on marches. So many weekends we spent leafleting in front of supermarkets, mm-hmm. really educating consumers about the impacts of pesticides on grapes at the time. And so for me, I thought that I had a really exciting childhood, one that I was able to experience so much and be around so many amazing leaders and mentors that were both my family, but also that were just part of a movement of people.
You were there during your grandfather's struggle for farm workers' rights. You were there in the movement. You saw and experienced harassment yourself. Tell me one lesson you learned in the fields of the Central Valley as an activist in those very early years of your life.
Wow. I mean, there's so much and it shaped who I am. I think one thing that was really important was understanding that as an individual that, and as farm workers, right, that they had power, that even though they may not have had the most education or have had the most kind of means or wealth, that They had tremendous power to be able to organize themselves, to be able to use their voice, to be able to use their vote, to be able to make conditions better for themselves and for their families. And that was a powerful lesson because it wasn't just about my grandfather, Cesar Chavez, or leaders of the movement. It was more about the farm workers and really showing them the power that they possess.
There's a bust of your grandfather now in the Oval Office. What does it mean to you? And in general?
Wow. I was so honored when I found out. It was actually the day before inauguration. I received a call late in the evening from one of the president's, you know, senior aides, letting me know that a decision had been made to place the bust of my grandfather in the Oval Office. And at the time, I had already been announced as the director of intergovernmental affairs for the White House. And so I appreciated, you know, just the heads up. You know, I was in a different role, and it wasn't, you know, at that point, I'm no longer kind of a family member, but I really appreciated the opportunity for just the president to be so thoughtful, to let me know in advance. And I was overwhelmed with joy. But then to actually walk into the Oval Office and to see a bust of my grandfather and of someone that symbolizes La Causa para nuestra gente was one of the most beautiful experiences and just a real point of connection for me and really full circle, going from my childhood of leafleting and marching and you know, supporting farm worker rights to now being in the Oval Office with the president and my grandfather being there with me.
Talking about full circles, you are now the first Latino, period, to run a presidential campaign. How does that feel?
Well, I take it with tremendous pride and responsibility. First, on the pride, you know, I understand that while I'm one Latina and with one experience, that I also, you know, can hopefully be a role model for so many Latinas out there who have shared similar experiences as I have throughout my years growing up and, you know, working and making sure that I can do my part to be able to provide for others. And the responsibility is that people are entrusting their faith and their support in the president and the vice president and in me to be able to lead this, you know, campaign. And we're assembling such a strong team across the board of leaders with diverse backgrounds that really bring, you know, the kind of lived experience that I bring to this campaign and to our work, because that's how we're going to reach our voters, through folks that have experiences that they share and that they know and that they understand, really talking to them and making sure they know what President Biden and Vice President Harris have done for the Latino community, because they have delivered more than any previous administration in the past.
Analistas dicen que el mandatario tendrá múltiples desafíos, uno de ellos su edad, porque será la persona más anciana en buscar la presidencia con 82 años de edad en 2024.
Sus facultades mentales no son como eran antes y que no están en condiciones de realmente pelear contra un candidato fuerte del Partido Republicano.
Varias encuestas han coincidido en que la edad de Joe Biden es uno de los factores principales que juegan en contra de sus intenciones de reelegirse.
Y podría ser que llegamos a un debate y encontramos un Biden que realmente no está a la altura de ser un presidente de los Estados Unidos.
Uno de los sondeos más recientes mostró que 77% de los encuestados piensa que Biden, de 80 años, es demasiado viejo para ser eficaz por 4 años más.
Pero lo interesante de esa encuesta es que el 69, casi el 70% de los demócratas habían votado indicando esto, ¿no? Que lo encuentran como que ya no debe de estar ahí, que prefieren a otra opción.
Let me ask you about the issues that will be discussed during the campaign. What do you say to the high percentage of the electorate, according to polls, who seem concerned by President Biden's age? What is the campaign going to say to those people?
Well, I think, you know, the president has a tremendous record of experience within public service and within public office. And I think we continue to see that real experience shine through in the critical work that he's been able to accomplish over the last 2.5 years. And that's bringing, you know, people together to negotiate major deals, like the recent debt deal that we had, to avoid any kind of impact on our economy. His ability to bring the world together in support of Ukraine and to unite NATO and to really continue to fight for democracy here and abroad. And so for us, we are really leaning into his experience. We know that it is important that people understand and trust who is leading this country through, you know, some of the most challenging times that we've faced, at least in my generation. We've been through a global pandemic. We've had the strongest economic recovery than any other country in the world. We're continuing to, just even as we saw today, to create, you know, more jobs, to help Latino small business owners. There's so much, you know, progress we continue to make. And that's a result of the experience that President Biden brings to the table.
In 2022, the strategy within the Democratic Party was built around reproductive rights and the defense of democracy, which President Biden really took as an issue he felt passionately about. What about 2024? What will be the two main issues you will talk about?
Well, you know, I think we'll talk about a number of issues, but I'd say, you know, some of the core pieces are really talking about freedom. I think at this moment in time in our country, we see so many efforts, especially on the part of many of the Republican nominees, talking about things like banning books, like taking away a woman's right to be able to make decisions about her own body and health care, you know, scapegoating immigrants. I mean, these are the kinds of sort of, I think, you know, what I consider kind of really anti to some of the values that are so dear to our community. Mm-hmm. And that is that sense of being able to make our own decisions, to not have government interfering with our healthcare decisions or decisions about our own bodies, not telling us which books we can give to our children or read to our children. It's just, it really is, I think, a fundamental kind of core piece of what we will continue to talk about, and that's freedom. The other piece is really focusing on the impact that we've made for the economy. We have had the strongest, you know, economic growth, but not just strong economic growth, it's really benefiting people, it's benefiting families, it's benefiting workers. We're seeing an increase in wages right now. We're seeing lower costs for prescription drugs and for insulin as a result of the policies that President Biden and Vice President Harris have put in place. And those are things that matter to Latinos, to Latino families, but to all of our families. You know, when they're sitting down at the kitchen table trying to figure out how they're going to make ends meet at the end of the month, which we know is so important and the reality of so many of our families.
Al volver veremos cómo el Partido Demócrata espera ganarse el voto latino.
Si no sabes que el Spicy McCrispy tiene spicy pepper sauce en el pan de arriba y en el pan de abajo, ¿qué sabes tú de la vida? Para pa pa pa.
Boost Mobile tiene una gran oferta para que aproveches tu reembolso de impuestos al máximo y te mantengas conectado. Al cambiarte a Boost, recibe un 50% de descuento en tu primer mes de datos ilimitados. O, con un plan ilimitado de $40, llévate un Samsung Galaxy A15 5G por $39.99. Obtén los mejores teléfonos en las redes 5G más grandes del país. Con Boost Mobile, cambiarse es fácil. Solo visita BoostMobile.com. Boost Mobile, sin miedo al éxito. Para clientes nuevos y solamente en línea, requiere AutoPay. 50% de descuento en el primer mes requiere un plan de $25 al mes. Aplican otras restricciones. Visita Boost Mobile.com para detalles.
Dicen que traigo la suerte a todo el que está a mi lado. Y esa es mi mala fortuna.
Basada en el clásico de Juan Rulfo, llega Univisión, el gallo de oro.
Supongamos que la caponera puede inclinar la suerte a quien ella quiera. ¿Estás tardando en conquistarla?
Con Lucero, José Ron y Plutarco Asa.
Este gallo está cambiando la vida.
En una historia legendaria de amor y azar.
No trates de cambiarme, no lo vas a lograr.
El gallo de oro, gran estreno miércoles 8 de mayo a las 9 por Univisión.
Seguimos conversando con Yuri Chávez Rodríguez. Los hispanos somos una minoría determinante en Estados Unidos. En las recientes elecciones de medio término se registró una cifra récord cuando más de 11.8 millones de hispanos votaron. Esto de acuerdo con la Asociación Nacional de Funcionarios Latinos Elegidos y Designados, la famosa NALEO.
El número de votantes hispanos elegibles aumentó en 4.7 millones desde el 2018. Lo que representa el 62% del crecimiento total de los votantes elegibles en ese país.
Una encuesta del New York Times esta semana, y creo que varias encuestas, hablan acerca de cómo latinos y afroamericanos están perdiendo como ese apoyo hacia Joe Biden.
Pero según las encuestas nacionales del New York Times, la popularidad de Biden entre los electores no blancos ha disminuido. Esta tendencia representa un marcado deterioro del apoyo que obtuvo en 2020 cuando ganó más del 70% de los votos de ese grupo.
Y obviamente eso es malo porque creo que nos hace un recordatorio del trabajo que tenemos que hacer especialmente como Partido Demócrata.
There are voices who have questioned whether Bidenomics has helped Latino families. The economy, according to polls, is the key issue for Latinos. But many, again, according to polls, don't really know what the administration has done. When you see this combination of factors regarding the economy, how will you address that particular issue when talking to a Latino community? How will you explain what the administration has done in the last few years?
Well, I think one, it's record low unemployment. It's extremely significant. So we're helping Latinos get back to work and to also, you know, be able to enter maybe new jobs that pay higher wages. So really creating new opportunities. We have a manufacturing boom that's happening across this country that's creating new manufacturing jobs in addition to a construction boom as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act. So we're continuing to create jobs and drive down unemployment. We're also investing in small businesses, you know, whether it was through the pandemic, making sure that so many of our Latino small businesses had the resources that they needed to be able to, one, weather the pandemic, but then two, reopen stronger and to find new opportunities for growth. I think that was, you know, the exciting part of some of the investments we were able to make in Latino small businesses is it gave them a chance to also innovate. Maybe they started online sales or a new delivery system. So those are the kinds of investments that we've made in helping Latino small businesses grow. And then healthcare. We know healthcare is so important to our community. Through the American Rescue Plan, we expanded affordable healthcare, and we're continuing to create opportunities for Latinos to access quality care and lower prescription drug prices. Again, we know those things matter to our families and to our seniors.
So when we talk about Latino voters in 2020, Donald Trump did 8% better among Latinos than in 2016. No doubt the Republican Party has made inroads within the Latino electorate, especially in some parts of the country, Texas, for example. How will you address it? For example, the challenge that Latino men represent, according to polls. How will President Biden talk to Latino men to bring them back to the Democratic Party? What's the key?
Well, you know, I think actually what we've seen is in the last couple of elections that, you know, Latino voters are continuing to really show up and turn out for Democrats. And, you know, the last couple of elections, we continue to see either 2-1 or 3-1 turnout from Latinos in support of Democrats. But we're also not going to take any vote for granted. And that's something that we've been clear about. And we're going to, you know, continue to invest.
Will he be in the community? Will President Biden be in the community? Will we see him?
Definitely. President Biden continues to show up, especially in some of the most critical moments for our communities. And we'll continue to see him, you know, very visible. As you know, in a reelection, the real opportunity that we have is to continue to show his leadership through being president and on the official side. And that's something that we're going to continue to really highlight and make sure that we're doing throughout the end of this year. And also reminding voters what's at stake in this election, because for us, that's really what the campaign apparatus is about and what it's for. It's reminding voters that there's a clear choice that they have before them. They can choose, you know, a president and a vice president who have a clear vision for investing in our communities mm-hmm. and ensuring that we are able to, you know, address the critical issues that are most important to our families. Or they can choose a party that continues to try to take the most extreme positions on things like a woman's right to choose, on banning books, on scapegoating immigrants, on, you know, continuing to try to, you know, give tax breaks to the most wealthy at the sacrifice of our Latino workers.
So it's 2023, and there's no immigration reform, nothing really, really for Dreamers when it comes to a definitive solution. Essential workers, whom we thought might get something in Congress, in the end apparently will not. Many blame the White House. Are they wrong in blaming the White House?
I think, you know, it's important that people understand the really great work that this president has put forward. I'd say first in helping to reunite families that were separated by the last administration, which we know had a devastating and chilling impact on so many of our communities and so many of our families. The president has also created and opened new legal pathways for immigrants to be able to come to the United States to seek asylum or to identify other ways in which they can continue to remain here and to be able to work and contribute to our communities. And he's done that for so many, you know, the countries that we know in Latin America are experiencing some of the most challenging circumstances for Venezuelans, for, you know, folks from Nicaragua and other communities. And so for us, it's about how do we continue to do what we can as an administration, or how does the president continue to do what he can as the president from an administrative perspective? But at the end of the day, as you know, we need Congress to act. And this is an issue that they have failed time and time again to act on. And it's really on the part of Republicans. Democrats continue to put forward solutions, and Republicans fail to come to the table in a real way to actually ensure that we have the policies that we need to modernize our immigration system.
El programa de ayuda humanitaria de Biden permite que cada mes ingresen al país hasta 30,000 personas de Cuba, Haití, Nicaragua y Venezuela que buscan asilo, pero tiene detractores.
Estados republicanos demandaron a la administración del presidente Joe Biden en busca de frenar la aplicación de la nueva regla de asilo en la frontera sur.
Esta demanda nueva tiene entre sus firmantes al estado de Florida.
Texas y otros 20 estados de tendencia republicana presentaron una demanda contra el programa por considerarlo ilegal. Según la demanda, el gran número de inmigrantes que reciben permisos muestra que los funcionarios los otorgan en masa. El veredicto del juez se dará a conocer en las próximas semanas.
Los estados están argumentando que esta nueva regla tiene errores que permiten que más inmigrantes entren de manera ilegal a los Estados Unidos.
So, for the first time in memory, or at least in my memory, and I've been following these things for a long time, Republican candidates, during a debate, have put forth the idea of bombing Mexico, attacking Mexico, using military force against Mexico to deal with a real problem, which is fentanyl and organized crime. What's the administration's reaction to that kind of rhetoric?
It's absolutely absurd, and it just shows the level of extremism that we're seeing from Republican candidates time and time again, and the fact that they're trying to take the most extreme positions, and it's going to be really challenging for them to be able to win in November 2024, because these are policies that voters have rejected time and time again. And so from our perspective, we're going to continue to ensure that, you know, we are addressing and actually funding the resources that DHS needs to crack down on and to address the fentanyl issue. But these kinds of absurd, you know, suggestions are not only bad policy, it's bad politics.
So we're in Wilmington. What does Wilmington mean for President Biden?
Well, Wilmington is really the place where he raised his children. It really is home for him. And so we see it as an important kind of going back to your roots opportunity for our campaign to be able to be here where he is a hometown hero. The Amtrak station's named after him. Pretty much every ice cream shop in the city has a photo of him with his favorite scoop of ice cream. And so it's just, it's been really wonderful to have that kind of just support and real welcoming spirit as we root our campaign here in Wilmington.
50 years ago, President Biden went through a brutal tragedy. How did the tragic accident that took the lives of his first wife and his young daughter shape him?
Well, you know, I think it's really shaped who he is at his core, someone who is deeply compassionate, who understands the value of life and kind of everything that we do to be able to contribute in one's lifetime, and also, you know, the value of faith and really understanding that through faith comes deep healing. And, you know, I have seen, and the reason why I share this is because I've seen him be able to, you know, really connect with people in moments of deep grief and deep tragedy in a way that I have not seen other leaders of his stature be able to do. And One was when we went to Surfside in the aftermath of the building collapse. And I've shared this with a few of my colleagues, that it's the day that President Biden went, and First Lady Dr. Biden, went from being my bosses to being my heroes, because they sat with every single family for at least 4 hours and made sure that they helped, really, you know, help to support them in this time of tragedy and help them really heal in a really tragic moment for themselves, for their families, for their communities. And that's who he is.
After that tragedy, he came back every day riding that train in that train station that is now named after him. He came back every day, 8,000 round trips apparently. What do you make of that? What does that mean?
That he's a father, and his role as a father was one that was so incredibly important to him that he needed to be there for his sons. It wasn't enough that he was, you know, taking on this role as a public servant and being a senator for the state. It was equally important to him that he was a father and that he was able to be there for his two sons as they needed him, especially in those moments, you know, following such a challenging tragedy.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more since we're walking. So what was it like being near not only Cesar Chavez, but Dolores Huerta and your mother and your father and your big and that large family, the movement? What was it like?
You know, for me, I felt just so privileged, right? It wasn't the kind of privilege that maybe others would think about from a wealth standpoint, but it was from an experience standpoint. The people I got to be around and just observe. And, you know, I was, as a kid, I was always very curious and constantly wanting to just be at the meetings and to just watch, you know, people in action. And so I feel like I was able to learn and observe so much from being around such, you know, great leaders and also just incredible humans.
There's a dark side. Every country has one or many. One of those dark sides in America is discrimination, racism. What was your first experience with that? What do you remember being your first experience with?
It was in second grade. I remember very clearly. I was starting school at the beginning of the year, and my second grade teacher put me in the lowest reading level without giving me an assessment or any kind of test. And my mother prided herself in actually teaching us to read very young. My mother was very adamant that we were going to be well-educated, you know, kids. And even though we moved around a lot, you know, because of my father's organizing, that wouldn't impact our education. So when I went home that evening and told my mother that I was in the lowest reading level, she got a little upset. And so the next day...
I can't imagine.
The next day, she went with me to the school, and she asked my teacher, you know, what was the reason? She kind of shrugged off that, oh, well, I just assumed she's one of the farm worker kids. And that's what she described to my mother. So my mother, in front of me, forced my teacher to sit me down and to actually see what reading level I was at. And I ended up in the highest reading level based on her test.
Your mother was fierce.
Oh, yes. Yeah. She passed away in 2000. She
yes,
had a rare...
I know.
Cancer,
no?
Disease. Yeah.
Oh, autoimmune disease?
Yeah, it's called scleroderma. It's similar to lupus.
That's what I read the scientific name, and clearly I'm not a scientist, and it sounded like some sort of...
sort of cancer, yeah. But she... Yeah, so but she was fierce. She's...
and I love that word. I imagine.
Yes.
Tell me more about her. Why was she fierce?
Well, she just was very strong in ensuring that, you know, as young women, that we were independent.
You have siblings?
I have an older sister and a younger brother.
Okay.
But that, you know, we were independent, that we knew kind of, we understood our own personal power.
So we found, I think, when you were first named as such an important figure in the Biden White House, your father was interviewed and he said this.
Arturo Rodriguez nos habló del significado de esa histórica asignación política.
La primera latina que ha servido en esa posición. Y también sabemos, ¿me entiendes?, que Judy lo puede hacer el trabajo. Y lo está dando a ella la oportunidad realmente para hacer lo que es necesario para mejorar y nuestro país para todos.
How does that feel?
Well, my father's daughter in so many ways. And I just am so honored that he beams with pride when he talks about the work that, you know, I'm able to do now and the leadership that I've been able to kind of step into. And he would jokingly tell me when he would visit me in D.C. that in D.C. he's no longer Arturo Rodriguez, he's Julie's father.
You shared with me the details of how your mother passed away. Your mother died a few years ago. Is she often in your thoughts?
She's the first person I bring into every office that I occupy. I have a picture of her, and it's the first thing I put on my desk in every office that I come into. She is someone who was a role model and someone who is with me every day and who I know continues to be a guiding light, even though she's no longer with us.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Leon.
Julie Chávez Rodríguez tiene por delante un desafío de verdad mayúsculo. En este momento, las encuestas mantienen a Joe Biden y a Donald Trump en un empate técnico. Ambos son impopulares. Julie Chávez Rodríguez sabe que los siguientes meses serán cruciales, no solamente para el futuro político de Joe Biden, sino para el futuro de Estados Unidos. Esta pregunta es para ti, hoy por hoy. ¿Crees que Joe Biden pueda vencer a Donald Trump? Usa la etiqueta Univisión Reporta en redes sociales. Danos tu opinión en Facebook, Instagram, Twitter o en TikTok. ¿Escuchaste Univisión Reporta? Si te gustó este episodio, síguenos, compártelo con otros. En la producción ejecutiva, Olivia Liendo. Producción de contenidos, Mili Zupan. Booking, Zoía González. Música original de Carlos Jorge García, Luis Daniel González y Jorge González. Soy León Krause. Gracias por escuchar Univisión Reporta.
Si no sabes que el Spicy McCrispy tiene Spicy Pepper Sauce en el pan de arriba y en el pan de abajo, ¿qué sabes tú de la vida? Para pa pa pa.
Boost Mobile tiene una gran oferta para que aproveches tu reembolso de impuestos al máximo y te mantengas conectado. Al cambiarte a Boost, recibe un 50% de descuento en tu primer mes de datos ilimitados. O, con un plan ilimitado de $40, llévate un Samsung Galaxy A15 5G por $39.99. Obtén los mejores teléfonos en las redes 5G más grandes del país. Con Boost Mobile, cambiarse es fácil. Solo visita BoostMobile.com. Boost Mobile, sin miedo al éxito. Para clientes nuevos y solamente en línea, requiere AutoPay. 50% de descuento en el primer mes requiere un plan de $25 al mes. Aplican otras restricciones. Visita Boost Mobile.
Lucero junto a José Ron protagonizan El Gallo de Oro. Gran estreno miércoles 8 de mayo a las 9 por Univisión.
Y de las mejores.